the profound satisfaction that I get from being able to get, care for, and eat my own food in a way that I find spiritually enriching. It gets me out into rugged, wild, beautiful places that I probably wouldn't take the initiative to go see otherwise. It's worth it for me.
This week on the Nature Stories podcast, producer Jesse Dukes heads into the woods with poet John Castine to hunt for deer and inspiration. I'm Samantha Brown with Atlantic Public Media, curating this podcast in collaboration with the Nature Conservancy and the Public Radio Exchange. Each week, we bring you stories about the intersection of people and place. Up now, Hunting Poet, produced by Jesse Dukes.
So remember what I told you. You want to pick your feet up when you walk and concentrate on heel to toe. Watch for sticks. Watch for crumply leaves. It's a good shot.
All right. I'll follow you.
It's a little before sunrise, and I'm following John Castine along a trail, looking for a place to hunt deer. John is in his late 30s. He's both clean-cut and weathered, thickly built and fit. And with his rifle and hunting clothes, he doesn't really look like a college professor.
So what I'm going to do is just go up this trail along the ridge for a little while until we see something that looks like we've got a good view, and then settle in.
There's enough light to walk, but the fog is really thick. We can see a tree here, a boulder there, but mostly just dark gray mist. And after 20 minutes of very slow walking, we settle on a spot just off the trail where we sit to wait for deer.
So we're socked in pretty tight by fog. And when the visibility is like this, pretty much anywhere as good as you can see that far. If the sun comes up and burns off the fog, we'll move.
I'm a pretty outdoorsy guy, but waiting for deer is hard. It's damp and chilly, and you can't move to stay warm or talk to pass the time. We strain to see them through the fog and trees, and we strain to hear deer footsteps against the dripping mist. But mostly, we just wait. And after an hour, my legs are going numb.
Can I ask you, when you're out here by yourself, what do you think about?
Poetry.
So you'll compose in your head?
Mm-hmm. If I'm going to be out all day long, go out before the sun comes up, come back after dark, then I'll bring a pencil and paper with me, so I don't forget.
Do you get restless?
No. Nope. I think I used to get restless, like the first 5 or 6 years I was hunting. I would fidget. You know, I would move every hour. Not anymore. One thing people like about hunting is unfiltered thought. You are very finely attuned to what's going on around you. Where the wind is, what you're hearing, where the light is, what you're seeing. But you don't have to be thinking about anything.
Yeah, John's yawning. Maybe because last night, instead of going to bed early like we probably should have, we stayed up late around the campfire.
Trust me.
We told stories, talked about poetry, and eventually John read some of his poems.
Would you read that poem?
Which one, Night Hunting?
Yeah.
Night Hunting. Because we wanted things the way they were in our minds' black eyes, we waited. The beaver raising ripples in a V behind his head, the thing we wanted. A weed is what might grow where you don't want it. A dahlia could be a weed, or love, or other notions. The heart can't choose to find itself enchanted.
This poem is about John and a friend waiting to shoot a beaver that's taken over the friend's pond. A pretty common practice in the country.
We wanted a pond to look like a pond. Standing poplars, shallows unsullied, fish and frogs and salamanders. The gleaming back of fur and fat may not belong, or may, god of varmints,
God of will, forgive us our trespasses. We know precisely what we do.
This poem explores John's ambivalence about hunting a beaver, and as a deer hunter, John says he doesn't like the killing or the violence, but he thinks it's worth it on the whole.
The profound satisfaction that I get from being able to get, care for, and eat my own food in a way that I find spiritually enriching, it gets me out into rugged, wild, beautiful places that I probably wouldn't take the initiative to go see otherwise. It's worth it for me.
Lots of John's poems deal with hunting, and I thought those were the ones he wrote while he was hunting. Actually, it turns out to be the opposite. He'll write about hunting when he's at home and other things when he's in the woods.
When I go in the woods, when I go for a walk, when I walk in the city, I'm not looking for subject matter. I'm looking for comparisons. I'm looking for metaphors, vocabulary. I don't set out to write poems that are about hunting.
Back on the hunt in the afternoon, we suddenly hear the sound of hunting dogs on the mountain. This is the most action we've gotten all day, and we hurry to the main trail.
Did you hear him? The lead dog is right where we were.
How do you know?
Just heard him.
We're hoping the dogs will scare the deer and get them moving, and we try to guess which way they'll go. We leave the trail and plunge right into one of the mountain laurel thickets.
So thick up here.
We're hoping to come out on the other side into a clearing where we'll be able to see any deer if they come by.
Alright, we're bushwhacking.
The laurel is just about face height, and it's hard to walk through, especially if you're holding a rifle or a microphone. And we don't find any clearing, so we sit down to think. John points at one of the mountain laurel trees. He asks me what adjective would I use to describe its bark.
I mean, there's going to be a botanical word for it.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to come up with an adjective for the texture and the color.
I realize he's looking for a metaphor for one of the poems he read me last night.
The best I've come up with so far is in that poem for the mountain laurel. You know, limber and striated, I think is what I ended up saying.
I don't know the word striated.
Striated works, right?
I just don't know what it means.
Oh, I mean striped.
Oh.
Striated is like closely related to stratified.
Yeah. Actually, like stratified too, because it the way it curves together, it kind of reminds me of rock layers, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that the word that's in there now is not exactly the right word. That's how I know the poem's not done.
That's a fun challenge.
That's what I do.
Yeah, I get it.
For a little while, I'm into this. Hanging out in the mountain laurel thicket, contemplating metaphors. But we've been out for 6 hours now. We haven't seen one deer. And I realize I'm shivering, and I need to get back to our tent and try to warm up. John is plenty warm and content to stay out in the mountain laurel in the icy mist, looking for deer that never come, or for more words for his poems.
For the mountain laurel. Here's what to admire. How it thrives on adversity, accepts its condition of want, and greens. Makes a limber bark, makes bright, ecliptic little coronated flowers, and speaks in the vernacular register, a watershed. In downpours, a verdant shelter, sheds water. Canny scantling, it's good at what it's good at. I'm trying hard to clear my head, to think without language, to remember that whole life before the adjective. Don't forget, the shadow moves more than you move, and intends less. Overhead, contrails center where jets just passed, just ice, wind-blown like seed where stars are what belongs.
That was Hunting Poet, produced by Jesse Dukes. This podcast is made possible with support from the Nature Conservancy, online at nature.org/stories, committed to protecting nature and preserving life. You can hear more pieces like this one at the Public Radio Exchange, prx.org. If you have thoughts or feedback, write to us at podcast@tnc.org. From Woodsull, Massachusetts, I'm Samantha Brown. Join us next week for a brand new Nature Stories podcast.